Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody, and this is Rick, and we are at the 28th of February, 2011. So, today, let's begin with our first question for the day. I have a friend who's struggling with her husband's infidelity. She's working on the marriage, but he is persisting that it is no longer what he wants. She suggested counseling, but he's not willing to accompany her. I've suggested a fair recovery to her, but I was wondering if you had any other suggestions I could give her to help get him involved in recovery. I guess I'm a little confused here. She's willing to work on the marriage, but he's persisting. It is no longer what he wants. You know, when someone comes to the place where they are not interested in the marriage and want to move on, if you know exactly why they don't want to be on the marriage, then I would certainly encourage, if there are children, if you've got anything like children, when we get going here, to say, look, would you at least step back and look at this and let's see if we can address what's in the marriage. That might be one way of going. Also, if you know, you can explain what you would like and see if they're willing to negotiate and at least talk to somebody. But in the long run, if they're not willing to do anything, you almost come to a place where you need to be able to let them go, as difficult as that is. I think that you don't want to be in a place where you're having to, let's see if I can find this here, I guess keep your hat in your hand, begging them, pleading with them to ultimately do something. And if you can just tell them what you want, and I would hope in the long run they'll make a really good decision. Looking at something here, if there's any other suggestions I might have. I think, don't beg. I think it's a really good point here. I'm kind of collecting my thoughts. I'm sorry here. I should have read through this beforehand. Because that's, and, you know, I think you can be strong, but if you appear just really needy, that's not going to be attractive to begin with. I think oftentimes writing letters is going to be a much better approach than if you just try to talk off the top of your head. If you can give them articles about trying to work things out, potentially that is a way to go. Let them go. If that's something they're not going to work on, the next step I would say is begin to really work on yourself emotionally and spiritually. And try to become the person that you feel like you need to be in the process, because in the long run, you'll be far more attractive if you're doing that to your mate, but even more than that, you'll be ready to go on with life, and you'll find your own strength, and I think that's really important. Seek professional help. I really think if you can get in with somebody who can help support you and help you grow and help you begin to maybe see where God's working all of this, that's going to be something that would be very helpful. I would also avoid, during this time period while you're trying to get them to do something, don't do anything stupid, like go out and have your own affair, trying to make them jealous by doing crazy things. Don't go on huge spending sprees. I think you want to still come out of all of this with your own self-respect and, you know, keeping a heart of love. Surround yourself with people. Another good step here would be surround yourself with people who are going to be a good support for you in this process. The last thing you want is to be with other people who are encouraging you to do really stupid things. I think that you need to be very patient, realizing that any change that ultimately is going to happen in your mate's heart is going to take much longer than you want. So if you're willing to give it a little bit of time, and wait. I mean, that is certainly no guarantee. If it's not, to me, it's never about even trying to save the marriage. It's really about me refocusing and being who God wants me to be, me refocusing and growing and taking off from there. You know, it's interesting because if you really grow and you use this and understand that maybe, you know, God's doing something here, maybe you actually change, I think, again, you're going to end up being far more not only appealing to him, but also to somebody else. And just know that my prayer is with you. I think it's incredibly difficult to go through something like this. And I do pray over time that, you know, he steps back and takes a look and does something really, maybe does the right thing in terms of at least exploring where his commitments are. And maybe he can figure out that, as we always say here at A Fair Recovery, my mate's not my problem. My mate just reveals the problem in me, and hopefully he'll be able to see what problems he has. So the next question here. Narcissism added to the mix. I so appreciated your great advice and encouragement. I don't know where I'd be today without you and A Fair Recovery. Thanks for your heart and all the work you and your staff do. I'm finding that dealing with narcissism seems to complicate things. Life is always about him, and everything that's wrong, of course, is my fault. Even when he says he's willing to deal with A Fair Recovery issues, it usually ends up just being another attempt at manipulation. Nothing gets addressed directly. It feels more like he's pulling a bait and switch on me to make me think he's going to be real this time, when in fact he's just trying to get something from me. I used to fall for this trick every time, not so much now that I know what I'm dealing with. The rose-colored glasses are pretty much gone, and the reality is settling in. It seems that most of the physical advice, or the typical advice, tends to backfire when you're dealing with a narcissist. Their perception almost on everything in life, they perceive almost everything in life as a personal attack and react likewise. Can you explain why this happens and how to avoid the counterattack that follows? Well, when one of the things about narcissism is they are very dismissive in their attachment style. They have a great deal of trouble naturally, even in doing relationships. And it's almost like they get uncomfortable. And I think much of the time what they're looking for, because there's such a deep shame core, whenever they feel that, what they're looking for, I think, is the validation that they really are okay. They're amazingly dependent on external circumstances. And when anything negative in life happens, because they're so carefully guarding their own image, afraid that somehow people will see them for what they really are, they're not even sure. I don't even know that they fully know that they're doing that, but whenever something seems like there's something they're afraid it's, you know, it's like they immediately assume it's them, and so they immediately get defensive. They can't even look at it without assuming that maybe you're going to talk to them about something totally not related to them. And one of the guys on the call who's been really deeply wounded, and he's not a narcissist, but from his own sexual addiction and his own past history, is a tremendous shame core. And he says every time his wife just says, "I want to talk to you," he just goes into complete panic, because he's afraid, or he knows, not that he's afraid, he tells himself that he's done something wrong and that he's fixing to get into trouble, almost like a little schoolboy that's just being called into the principal's office. And that sort of behavior or that sort of reaction happens all the time. Even if you just say, "Let's talk about this," they immediately assume something's wrong, they did something wrong. And to avoid that counterattack, the only way I know is to say, when you bring up topics with them, always begin by, you know, "I want to talk about something," and you can almost say, "I'm not blaming you." Stephanie always did the one with me, you know, "You're going to want to be defensive about this." But giving them a chance to, I think, maybe get their guard up a little, but when they can see you're just trying to take care of them, I always, when I talk with them, will say things like, I'd like to invite you to consider the possibility that, so that I don't say things directly at them if I'm just speaking with them. And I invite them to consider things a lot. And typically you're just inviting them to consider, they're not going to be as reactive. So hopefully that'll be one tool you can use that'll be helpful. Okay, feeling safe. One of the things that makes me feel safe is being able to look at my husband's emails and check his cell phone. It has been 2 months since the last email from his AP. He is resistant to my continuing to look at his communications. He feels that these things are personal and private, essentially his stuff. However, that's how all of this started. Secrets, what do I do? How do I handle this? I need safe people. He doesn't want to feel put upon. You know, in my opinion, that's a difficult situation. I don't know. Well, there are two things that need to be safe. It takes two people in a relationship. One, I certainly think that if someone's genuinely interested, this is back to the shame thing I was talking about in the previous question. If somebody's deeply shameful and they feel like you're checking them out, ultimately they always move into shame. They haven't figured out that their sense of defensiveness really says something about them. It doesn't say anything about their mate. You know, why are they defensive? It's not always guilt about having done something. It's just that they can't get out of the place of forgetting, or they can't get out of having to remember that they did something wrong. The checking takes them back to a point of failure, which they've been unable to forgive themselves for. Therefore, they get really defensive and they get angry and they want us just to move on and to quit thinking about it so that they can heal. The other reason that it ends up being a problem, however, at times ends up being the unsafe or the hurt spouse's inability to be safe in those conversations. And I think both parties need to clearly remember they do need to be safe. The hurt spouse, if they see something, if they're questioning, they need to watch their tone of voice. They need to be, I think, certainly appreciative that the other person's open. And the unfaithful spouse needs to be appreciative that the hurt spouse is there still trying to work through their own fear. And hopefully it becomes a mutually beneficial thing where they're supporting each other in the process. I hope that the two of them can find some counseling ultimately to work through that, because typically if couples can discuss those sorts of things, they can work through it and find a system that works where both can feel safe. Now, next question. Reconnecting. My husband and I are 9 months out from full disclosure. I'm the hurt spouse. My husband has been making every effort available to rebuild the marriage, which is making me feel safe by going to SA meetings, CR meetings, and taking lie detector tests. We've completed 911 marriage, Harboring Hope, and attended counseling. He's also reading books on relationships and putting into practice everything he reads. I honestly don't know how much more he can do, but I'm completely disconnected from the relationship. I have almost no emotional or sexual attachment to him. I'd rather push him away than attempt to get the needed attachment back. At about what time in recovery should this change? Do you have any suggestions on how I can overcome this? If you've done 911 marriage, you'll know that it's a long process, 18 to 24 months, and it's not uncommon for someone not to experience feelings for their mate for closer to the 18-month period. I mean, eventually when the pain subsides far enough and it begins to feel secure enough, that desire to reattach, I think, begins to come. You need to get past the first year at 9 months out, I don't know that it's anything that would be a red flag to me. I would just say be patient. I do believe that it'll come in time. I really do. You just want to watch your mate over time, try to see the positive things that they're doing and the consistency. And I think especially if you'll step back and begin to watch how they are connecting with other people and what they're doing with other people and the places ultimately where they've changed, that may also be appealing to you. The other thing that you might consider is for the two of you to do some marriage counseling and talk to a professional who maybe can help you develop or find some ways to connect over time. So hopefully that'll give you some suggestions, a good place to start. Again, I don't think you're too far out from the bell curve on this one, though, and I think it sounds pretty normal. Final question for the day. After divorce counseling for kids. My wife and I recently divorced, and she has the kids seeing a counselor. The counselor told my ex-wife that she must be honest with our girls, ages 7 and 5, about any of their questions. When my 7-year-old asked whether I dated my affair partner before we divorced was final, my ex-wife told her yes. Now, I don't agree with the counselor in that I don't feel a 7-year-old can comprehend and understand the complexities of the relationship and or of the affair. At 7 years old, the idea of dating is not the same as the adult's idea of dating. How honest do you feel my ex-wife and I need to be when answering questions from our 7- and 5-year-olds? They will continue to know the entire truth, but can they handle it now? Thank you for responding. You know, one of the things I'd want to know is how much does a 7-year-old already know? My question would be if the 7-year-old is asking that question, you know, what have the children already been exposed to through the divorce process? I do agree that it's important to answer their questions, certainly at an age, kind of at an age-appropriate level. If the 7-year-old already knew about the relationship, in some ways dating may have been the closest concept that she could come up with about what that meant. I think that the two of you being able to talk, and if you can talk with a counselor who can help you come up with what you are going to say to the kids if they ask questions, I would suggest you write down every question you think the kids might answer over time, and the two of you see if you can negotiate ultimately what you would want to say about that. I don't know if your 7-year-old to ask you the question, how, you know, were we dating? What would you say? Daddy did some things that hurt mommy, but that doesn't answer the question either. So at one level, the 7-year-old, if you don't answer a question somehow, but they've already seen something, they're going to have a lot of confusion. And the last thing you want to do is, I think, also confuse them. So if you can kind of come up with questions and figure out what you want to tell the kids, I think on the front end, that would actually be a really good idea. Speaking with, again, a therapist that can help you talk about those things and come up with those answers, I think could be a really, really good idea. You know, the other thing I would be curious, now that you're recently divorced, I would want to know what have y'all told the kids about the divorce? Potentially, I don't know what their therapist would think about this, their counselor, but maybe a family meeting would be in order to talk about some of these things where the counselor is present to help with that. hope that helps a little bit. I would certainly, the last thing is, you know, including the counselor to determine what to say and how to answer those questions. If you have a list of questions, I think would be very useful. So that's that question. Let's look here. I'm checking here. Hang on, Jessica. I'm sorry. Mumbling to myself. Okay. That ends the call for the day. I want to thank everybody for joining in, and we'll talk to you next week. God bless.